Operations Subcommittee meeting, November 7th, 2023, 4:00 PM. Item number two, Notification of Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director of the first year staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt in the director's discussion and action. Thank you very much. Item number three. Quorum call.
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Keesley?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Sherman?
Here. Item number four, Adoption of Agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Keesley?
Yeah.
Johnson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number five, Proof of Publication of Meeting Notice. We have that and become part of the permanent record. Item number six, Renewal of USGA Maintenance Agreement for Papio Flood Warning System Gauges. Ian?
Yep, good afternoon, everybody. So this will be a pretty familiar item, I think, for you all. It's our annual renewal with USGS for the flood warning system in the Pillion Creek watershed. If we go to page two of the memo, there's a map of 19 of the 22 stream gauges, all the ones in the watershed. There's two more to the east of the Pillion Creek boundary and one up north near Sioux City. These are all the ones in the watershed, though. Pretty standard, pretty similar to last year, both the USGS cost share and our cost. So the district cost share for this year is $137,450, and the USGS will cost share in two parts, one part through their federal priority stream gauges program for $19,905, and one part through their cooperative matching funds for $16,875. There's a further breakdown on the third page of the memo. It has a full table breakdown for each individual stream gauge, the data collected by each gauge, whether it's discharge, stage, just rainfall data, and then how much the NRD would cost share for each of those gauges, how much we get from each of those USGS cost share programs. And just a reminder that total that we would be approving, that $137,450, we would get some reimbursement down the line from various partner jurisdictions that we are in agreement with, so namely Douglas County, Sarpy County, Washington County, and the City of Omaha. Yeah, just very quick overview, something that we renew every year. Happy to take further questions on that breakdown, have some information for USGS on, you know, the different tasks that are completed as part of this agreement, but just one that keeps coming around to keep that system supported and maintained.
Thank you very much, Ian. We can have a motion on this.
Who's that recommendation?
We can have a second.
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Keesley?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number seven, interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha for WP1. Ian?
Yep. So WP1 flood control reservoir, it's to be located around 180th Street and Fort Street, is currently in the final design stage. Anticipated plan right now is to have that design completed near the end of the year, maybe early next year, which would put us at construction to beginning sometime late spring, early summer of 2024. So in preparation for that, this interlocal agreement was drafted, reviewed by district legal counsel, our staff, sent over to the City of Omaha for comment. It's attached to this memo, so hopefully everyone's had a chance to look it over. It's pretty similar to many of the previous agreements that we've entered into for the reservoir projects. There's a summary of some of the main responsibilities that are set out in that agreement on the front page of the memo. Namely, the district would construct all the project features and be responsible for maintaining the flood control features in perpetuity, and then the other project features, so the recreation, the mitigation improvements, for 5 years after construction of the project or until the City of Omaha were to annex any land adjacent to the project. There is one small note that in the event of any severe erosion at the project site, the NRD would help the city in repair of that. And then other major point is that the district would have sole discretion in naming the project in consideration of, you know, any recommendations from the public or the city. So that's kind of the large overview of what's detailed in the agreement. If there's any specific questions on anything within there, happy to answer those. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We can have a motion.
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
We have a motion. We can have a second.
Second.
We have a second, thank you. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Direct? What?
Missed a couple of meetings here, so I'm sorry I'm out of the loop here a little bit, what you guys are up to, but I'm sorry, I had some other engagements here. But my name is Kenneth Beckstrom. I live at 15429 Hamilton Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68154. I guess I'm curious who bought this land? Is that some that you guys acquired here back 6 months ago or so, or you don't know? Okay.
It's been acquired over several years. This is the final agreement to build this with the city of Omaha. The interlocal agreement has nothing to do with purchase of any property.
It doesn't have anything to do with what?
With the purchase of any property. This is an operation and maintenance agreement with the city of Omaha.
So, anyway, I had a little write-up I put together here for him. You know, just now's as good a time as any. I've had the opportunity to attend several of your meetings, and I have been able to review several appraisals that you had completed. And I've stated several times.
Yeah, this is not, we're not purchasing any property. So what you're saying won't be germane to the item that we're discussing.
Okay. Well, it's more or less a general statement. It isn't necessarily.
Well, the question is, it's just not germane. So why would you want to read it?
It has nothing to do with the interlocal agreement.
Oh, okay, yeah. I guess that is true. So I'll wait. Let me know when I can make my comments. I appreciate it there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to make comments germane to this item? We don't have any directors. Any questions?
As we enter these interlocals, there are going to be more of these coming up as we build more dams. Just kind of an editorial. My grandson had a football game up at Paynton High School, and I took the opportunity to go around Newport Lake, Bennington Lake, Newport Landing, as we call it. And that's, Ted, that's your district, right? I hadn't been up there for a long, long time, but I was thoroughly impressed with the development. You know, we as an NRD board, before your time, maybe you knew about it, though, were criticized, and still to this day get criticized sometimes about our arrangement with that. I can't remember the developer, and it doesn't matter. It's not important, but.
Craig came, wasn't it?
No, it doesn't ring a bell. But I was impressed with the type of housing. What prompted, obviously, is in the neighborhood, but there was a house for sale, $750,000. I wanted to look at it. Not to buy it, I guess, for it. But it's on the, I think, the west side. But it was interesting to see the types of housing there. And the further outside that particular development, there's another, as you go down the hill from the high school heading east, there's another development going on that doesn't affect us. I mean, it's not in the floodplain or anything. I hope, maybe it is. But just in general, I mean, the static we got when we entered into that before your time, John, mm-hmm. and maybe we were still getting it on the street, yes, so to speak. But I was impressed, and when I look at the small amount of flood control that we give with that lake, and it is relatively small compared to the other structures, but what it's done for the community, and Ted, you can either say I'm wrong, or maybe the tax base is what I'm thinking about.
Well, you found a house there for $750,000 around that lake. That was amazing. Most of those are multi-million.
Are they? Okay.
$2 to $3 million. Where did you find a $750,000?
It was right up in social media, the World Herald or something.
Probably a garage.
Garage, probably, cause that.
Connected to the garage or the mother-in-law house or whatever.
But then the mother-in-law house.
But, a general view, just me driving through, just, you know, what these structures can do and will be doing way beyond our time, but, it was, a more positive, trip through the area in spite of what we've, some of us old timers have been through. So, that's all I want to say.
Is there any comment from directors?
I had one small thing. In 5 years, if it's not annexed in 5 years, does the city still take it over or do we?
Yeah, okay.
So whichever occurs first, 5 years or.
Next for us is 5 years.
Yeah.
Hanging on to this, thank you.
That area will be annexed pretty quickly. It's growing quickly.
Any other comments from directors? Roll call.
No.
No, roll call. We're roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teeter?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number eight, amendment four with Houston Engineering for WP two professional services. Ian?
Last one for me, I promise. So this is, amendment number four for WP two. So you'll recall in October, we accepted a bid from Valley Corp for WP two. And this amendment, covers a lot of additional work that took place near the end of the final design process for the project. A lot of coordination with DNR and their review, coordination with Northern Natural Gas, who owns a pipeline that runs right along the, toe of what will be the toe of the embankment of WP two. Previous amendments to the contract with Houston have detailed other design work and the separate construction and bidding of the water quality basin. But as I said, this one is mostly design work, specifically detailing, the geotech in the area, as well as the internal drainage design, which DNR had some, I think, changes in, stance on, required some additional design and alternatives analysis. And that resulted in changes to other elements of the design, modifications of the specs, quantities, planned drafting, et cetera. And then lastly, the preparation and submittal of a second WSF application, which was a worthwhile effort, as we did receive that funding. So all of those tasks resulted, in this amendment, which adds an additional not to exceed amount of $113,235 to the contract, which brings, the total, including all the previous amendments, to a total amount of $1,842,937, not to exceed amount. And a further breakdown of those tasks is attached to this memo, as well as a breakdown of the fee, attributed to each of those tasks, on the very last page. And I'd be happy to answer some questions about that. Sarah Mecklenburg from Houston is also here to ask, answer any specific questions. But yeah, all that information is available there.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Mm-hmm. We have a motion on this item. Got a motion?
Yeah.
Second?
Second.
Second, we have anybody from the public who wishes to speak to the item?
Sure. Following up with the comments made by Mr. Thompson there. Kenneth Beckstrom, 15429 Hamilton Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68154. My email, if anybody wanted to email me and tell me what your priorities are. As far as attending the meeting, my is ken.agone, A-G-O-N-E, at gmail.com. But anyway, he made a comment about, if I understood him correctly, properties with a lake view have a significant value.
Yeah, that was a previous agenda item.
Yeah, but you wouldn't let me talk, man.
And again,
I did an appraisal for you folks back.
Yeah, but what did it have to do with this item?
You wouldn't let me comment to Mr. Thompson's statements earlier.
Because you moved on. We moved on to the next item.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you wouldn't let me speak then.
Because you weren't speaking in anything that had to do with the
It's agenda. Not germane to this item.
Mr. Thompson brought up the value of a lakefront view, a lake view. And I'm trying to explain to you that I did an appraisal for you guys, I think back in December, towards the end of last year.
It's point of order.
Related to anything yeah. that we're discussing.
Right.
Voting.
But anyway, my conclusion was that it's the dam could almost, it really doesn't have a negative impact on value. So you guys build a dam, spend thousands and thousands of dollars to build a dam for a property, on a property. And when it's all said and done, the property is going to have at least the same value, at least the same value that it had before the dam was built.
Okay, thank you for your comment.
Appreciate the opportunity to almost speak uninterrupted. Thank you.
Mr. General Manager, where the hell's our sheriff at?
Sometimes they get calls, but we'll make sure they're here next time.
Any other comment from the public?
You're the sheriff.
Directors.
I'm sorry?
We're gonna pay out more money here, it looks like, but who is the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources? Are they the ones that are making all the internal drainage design changes that we're paying extra for?
No, they review the plans, provide comments.
Who makes the internal drainage design changes? Because we're being charged more because we have internal drainage design changes. Who designed the changes?
Yeah, it's the NDNR Dam Safety.
So they are.
So they had to change some requirements, so we had to react.
How does that happen all of a sudden that we have to do that?
They do, and you might want to add, they've changed things as they learn more, as more designs come in over time.
We have no choice.
No, we have to get a dam safety permit, so you're required to meet the dam safety guidelines as they give you comments, really, if you want your plan to be approved. You kind of have to address and make sure that the dam safety approves of your design. And so sometimes it turns into a relatively iterative process, unfortunately. Also, there was a new engineering manual, TR-210-60, that came out amongst the design, and so really just interpreting the new guidance and showing dam safety what that means and what we would suggest from a dam safety standpoint for a geotech design. Taking that back to our plans, trying to figure out how that fits in. It becomes iterative, and so unfortunately, yeah, it becomes an extra effort, but ultimately it's to prove that our design is the safe design.
And these changes weren't knowable prior to this time, is that what you're saying?
Very hard to predict, exactly. And they did, the comments did change from when we designed WP 6 and 7 to this round.
Right, because you've certainly done dams before, so why?
Right. His comments changed, his approach changed. As Amanda said, they learn more, new guidance comes out, new technical guidance that you are obliged to follow. So we got those permits, so that was a win, so, but it took some extra effort.
More additional buildings coming up in the future?
Well, the project's out to bid. So no design changes other than anything that happens in the field, hopefully minimal, but.
All right, thank you.
Eric?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman of the committee. I guess I can understand Director Japp's frustration, but I just want to say I appreciate an extra pair of eyes, maybe oversight. It's another agency, but nonetheless, the end result is to make sure the dam's totally safe. And if they're requiring that, I think, it's a good thing to vote on it and sign off on it. Thank you.
Any other comments from directors? Roll call.
Bowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Weezer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye.
Thank you.
Item number nine, groundwater monitoring joint funding agreement with USGS. Philip?
Good evening, everybody, directors. Like Ian said, this is one that's come before the directors before. It's a ongoing agreement that we have with USGS to operate and run the continuous recording water level gauges within our district in the area between the Platte River and the Elkhorn. Very little actually in terms of cost has changed between last year and this year. So this year the total cost is $18,570, of which our portion is $14,200. And so that's for six gauges that are doing continuous recording of the groundwater levels from the Platte River over by Lashara and running a cross section over towards Waterloo. This groundwater level information is things that we use within our IMP reporting, our basin-wide plans, or the Lower Platte drought contingency plan that we're a part of. I use this data along with the groundwater levels that I take every spring and fall to determine what kind of impact pumping in the area has had for irrigation pumping, what happens in terms of periods of high water, high precipitation, low water drought times. And these gauges are kind of helping us determine what is happening within the flow regime in that area between the Platte and the Elkhorn. I just did want to note that when that initial study that these gauges were decided to be continuously monitored, that was in 2016 to 2018. So if you guys remember, that was a period where we actually had a fair amount of rain that year. And this year we did not. And so being able to take the data that I'm collecting from other wells and then these wells, it'll help us kind of determine what the flow regime is within that district based on the pumping that will have occurred and kind of where the water sourcing is coming from, how it changes the flow dynamics back and forth between the Platte and the Elkhorn, and the overall effects on the rates of recharge going to the aquifer in that area.
Thank you very much. We can have a motion on this item.
All motion for staff recommendation.
You got a motion? Need a second.
I'll second it for discussion purposes.
Okay. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
Yes. Tell me what we learned the last year.
In the last year from water levels in general or from these gauges?
Okay.
Water levels in general or from these gauges?
Well, water levels, we know water levels dropped. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Every day.
Yeah, so.
Okay, I can go out and look at a lake and tell you that. I mean, you know.
Yeah. You can look at the surface water levels and the stream surrounding it and say, yes, what would be a perennial stream last year is now not flowing, right? But what that doesn't tell you is the overall rate that when you pump a well, and depending on that geology, how far that drop occurred, and then how quickly and how far back up that water level has rebounded, both right after pumping, which is why we do these in the fall, and then in the spring after it's had that seasonal period to rebound. And so if you look at a hydrograph of any kind of a groundwater gauge, you're going to see the periods over it'll drop and then come back up and drop and come back up. And depending on the season and how hard it's been pumped and how much precipitation recharges has occurred, you're going to get a good idea of what kind of water availability is going to be present within that area that you're taking the groundwater level sample at, or groundwater level point at. And you'll have an idea of how much of that water is coming from the streams. And so
let me ask you, where does the water go when you sample it at Platte River Landing and it goes to Waterloo?
Mm-hmm.
Now tell me, where does that water go when it's in the Elkhorn system?
The Elkhorn system? And so all the groundwater flows within this area eventually all end up making their way towards either the Elkhorn and into the Platte or directly to the Platte themselves and out to the Missouri.
Okay, so we have Platte River water that mm-hmm. goes to the Elkhorn and goes right back to the Platte, and mm-hmm. we're spending $14,000 to do a 5-mile stretch to tell us exactly that. It's never going to change. It's always going to be the same, and there's nothing we're going to do. It's not going to have any major impact on any.
Yes, it will, because the amount of water that is pulled from the aquifer systems is directly impacting the water availability within the streams themselves. And we do have agreements on the Platte River with various entities, with the other NRDs, with the state, with Game and Parks, with, I believe, the EPA has their fingers in that with some of the endangered species. And so if understanding what is occurring within that groundwater system, where the water is going to, how much is coming in and out of the streams is actually really needed, because we are obligated to have a certain amount of water in the streams at certain times. And understanding what's happening within the groundwater, within these aquifers, within these wells, gives us part of that information that we can use this for decision making.
Thank you.
Director?
Yes.
Eric?
Larry first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you're responsible for the Papio Missouri NRD, but do you know if other NRDs are entering in agreements with the USGS
And so for the, for continuous groundwater monitoring in terms of the water levels, I don't know if any of the other NRDs do. A lot, so for sure, I know Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and Lower Elkhorn all maintain continuous record monitoring of subset wells within their district, and they have technicians hired to help do a lot of that work. So they send people out to pull out the equipment, hook up the computer, pull off the data, record the data within the databases, report that back to either the Conservation Survey Division or the USGS itself. And so a lot of that work in other NRDs is done internally. But they also have groundwater technicians that they have hired to help do that work, as well as the groundwater quality sampling and monitoring as well.
And might this data be readily available on a website? It's like the stream gauges?
Yeah, and so all these continuous water levels are all available on the USGS website.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just a comment from me that I think these are highly important, especially in a drought that mm-hmm. we're in, extreme drought, exceptional drought. But I think the director next to me also had a question.
Okay. Director?
Okay. I'm kind of a data junkie, and I love gathering this research information, but I don't like paying for it unless I know how it's going to be utilized, where the profit is.
Mm-hmm.
So if water levels drop, when they drop, what happens? Who reacts to this data other than us? Because we don't really take any action, but what do they do? And so, for instance, just give me a few examples of Game and Parks, you said, EPA, NDR, yep. Or DNR, rather.
DNR.
At what level is action required? Does the water level have to drop by a certain percentage? And what level, what percentages, what data has to occur to put these people into additional action?
Yeah. We have within our rules, within Appendix N, that determines which level we're at in terms of regulation. So currently, we talk about the IMP area, on this lower L part around the Platte and the lower Elkhorn, because we have that within our IMP. That's where modeling and analytical analysis has happened to show that there is a pull from the groundwater systems and an influence to the stream itself. And so that affects the amount of water that we are required to make sure is in the river system. And so, this data all gets kind of put into those kind of models. It gets put into those understanding and those management decisions. And so, the state's not going to come in and say, "Hey, you have big drops in groundwater level in these areas. We're concerned." That becomes our concern and our management concerns. And so, if we start seeing percentage drops in saturated thickness of the groundwater in these areas, we have within our rules the ability to start putting various kinds of incentives, educational incentives, and if we absolutely have to, start doing some sort of regulation to people within the area to try and buoy the groundwater supplies that we do have. And so we have it within our rules that we can make these determinations, and the collecting of this data gives us more information to make those decisions.
Water levels rise,
mm-hmm.
would that require a reconsideration of county appropriations, expanded availability for the irrigators?
It could.
Or does it require somebody like us to make an application to help those irrigators out?
Yeah, most of the groundwater regulations would be through us, and so how we want to handle that would be handled basically through various kind of management plans, educational plans, and rulemaking that we can do here, and working with the producers to try and show them either one thing, like we're doing flow meters, going to be required March 1st of 2025 for all the producers with irrigation wells within our IMP area, and so we can use that. They'll be providing us their pumping information for the previous year. So based on, I could know how much water has been pumped in each of the wells, put that together with the recorded groundwater levels I have that I've taken, and we can kind of start pinpointing areas of concern. So we can say, you know, this area of 20 square miles had a big drop in groundwater levels across the board. Where were there big pumping occurring? Where was there not? Is there people that we need to approach and start doing some more education, talking with them more personally? I would always push to be doing more education and dialogue before I do anything regulation with the producers. But it would also give us information to show that this is a problem, this is what's occurring, this is the area it's occurring in, and we can kind of use that to pinpoint any kind of management actions we have. Whereas if I just saw groundwater levels dropping in an area, you kind of have to make a decision based on that small amount of information you have and apply it to a broad area, right?
It kind of leads me to my last question is, how many potential wells are in the area? And if we only have six sites, what percentage of coverage are we getting? Is there 100 in there? We got six at 6%. And what's necessary to really produce the quality data?
These six sites are just continuous record sites. And so these are recording throughout the entire year. And so you'll see, even during pumping season, you'll see that daily drop up and down. And then as wells are turned off, you'll see it come back up. And I also have been doing, like, that's why I was early. I was up there actually earlier today, up around Waterloo and Valley, taking water levels. And so then I'll have spring and fall. And so you have points along your along your hydrograph. And then this gives us continuous information. And so we have those points of highs, lows every year based on a larger coverage of wells that I'm taking water levels from. And then these six across the district gives me a full, uninterrupted picture.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You know, I've seen the Platte River go down to 300 cubic feet a second. I've seen the Elkhorn at 175. When do you say no more? You're hurting the fish.
Yeah, and so the determination for what flow is in the river is, especially for like the endangered species, that's done through the EPA, and they send out alerts.
We don't want to hurt a paddle sturgeon, do we?
Yeah. If you remember a couple years ago, there was low water levels in the Platte, and because of those low water levels, the water temperature of the Platte actually increased. And it increased to a level that the EPA was concerned mm-hmm. about the quality of the water based on that the fish were starting to have die-offs that they were seeing of various fish species, and so that makes them concerned about the endangered species. And so they started making various calls, I know for sure, to the NPPD and the Department of Natural Resources to see what kind of flow they can get back in that river through returns to like the Loop River canal return to try and get more water back through there to try and lower the water temperature back down. And so there's various things they can do through various entities that they can try and affect change, I guess is the best thing I could say. But in terms of what our district can do, it's more a matter of the groundwater itself instead of the surface water in terms of like the impact that we have within our regulatory boundary.
Rich, any other question?
I'm good.
Just another comment. So, I mean, the 14,200, there's no way that we could hire our own people to do continuous monitoring to even touch that from just the management, per management perspective. So as far as them doing it, and I don't know why other districts don't have, but that's their.
Yeah, a lot of the other districts get away with it because they have an economy of scale going on where they have, you know, 200 sites that they have continuous records on, where we have like 75 total, throughout. And so it's definitely an economy of scale. And so if you're sending guys out for 200 versus like, you know, six, it makes a difference. Chairman?
Yes.
One last comment. The urbanization of that area is tremendous, with blue water. The cornfields are disappearing. We're getting lakes. We're getting housing subdivisions. I noticed that the city of Valley, for example, I think in the last 5 years went from 300 and some acre feet of water, now up to 890 or something like that, used annually.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, that area is becoming more and more urbanized and less agricultural.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't see the, you know, are you going to tell the City of Valley you can't take water?
So, how do I, so when you urbanize an area, you're not just changing the overall groundwater withdrawals that you're occurring, you're also changing the recharge regime entirely from either, from initially way back when it was settled to a prairie grassland wooded area to a farmland and then going to an urban area. The recharge rates start differing greatly. The pumping rates start changing a lot based on the population per square mile. If we start seeing, like, the valley starts getting a huge influx in population growth, they would probably end up start either one, they would start expanding their groundwater pumping to meet that new demand, in which case that would all go through us in terms of getting those new municipal wells approved. And anything greater than 300 acre feet, we would have to model it out. And then that would also go through regulatory channels over at the State Department of Natural Resources as well. And then they're all likely, if it's becoming that great, which eventually in the future, you know, it's going to, there's also probably going to end up being talks with MUD to see if there's going to be any kind of supplementary supply that can be given through that system. And so as everything gets more urbanized, that's something always to keep in mind of is where, what water do we have? Where is it coming from? What do we need to do to model this information out that we can make better management decisions that we can actually keep on top of our various obligations. Yeah.
Any other questions from directors?
Yeah, just two quick ones. How long have we been doing this? How long has this agreement, how many years have we been, you know, monitoring with this agreement?
Yeah, so this, so these wells really came into effect back in like 2016 period when they started doing the initial USGS study. And so in terms of monitoring wells, they're not super old because, you know, a lot of wells that we have monitoring wells are go back to like the 70s. So these are relatively new ones with, but we're going to keep, I'm hoping that we can keep this agreement going and keep getting this information because the longer term impacts that we have and we have these records. So as we have really wet years, really dry years, changes in land use, we can start seeing how the groundwater responds to those changes, and having that continuous record is very handy.
Hey, you kind of answered my second question, but based on what I'm hearing today, what would happen if we don't approve this agreement with, to the NRD? What would the
so if we do not approve this agreement, it would still likely, well, one, we'd either stop doing any of this groundwater level recording, in which case I start losing information that we've collected and we start losing that historic record in the future. So as this area starts getting more developed, we start losing pieces of that continuous record and we lose an ability to have those pinpoints along wet, dry years to determine what should we expect in the groundwater system. And so,
and either John or Phil, how's that a detriment to the NRD?
If we don't have information?
Yeah, I mean, so we obviously need this information. That's kind of what I'm getting at, right?
Yes.
Okay. So,
and so,
I just say, for one, it limits our ability to predict the future. So if Valley starts becoming more urbanized and they start using more groundwater, and we don't have the data, so how do we know eventually what year, if they have five dry years in a row, how much do they have left in the aquifer to pump? So you got a city of 10,000 people and all of a sudden they run, their wells run dry. It'd be nice to know that when we got close to that point sometime in the future. So yeah. I think that's what you lose, yeah. That crystal ball is always fuzzy, but it'd be real fuzzy if you only had 2 points on a graph instead of continuously knowing what's going on with that aquifer. And if that was a simple explanation for you, fill in the technical details, but
yeah, that's roughly it.
Rich?
groundwater levels are tested below the Elkhorn, so how does that, I mean, we're going to know what the level is downstream of this little, this is a little bitty area we were talking about. It's been quite a bit of money. And again, the Platte River water at Platte River Landing at Highway 64 to Shara goes cross country, goes through valley, goes back into the Elkhorn River at Waterloo, goes right back down to the Platte River at the mouth, and goes into the Platte River where it is again sampled by the city of Omaha for their or MUD well field. They know what the levels are. You know, I guess my point is I'm frustrated we're so hung up about a 5 mile area. We know we're at the bottom of the barrel. All the river water from a whole across the state is going to come down river. We're going to have all these other reporting stations above us. If it starts going down, it's logical we'll know for at Fremont and North Bend or whatever. As it goes up, we'll have a good idea, and then when it gets below the Elkhorn, we're going to have a great idea because MUD is right there all the way down. And to me, it's rather wasteful, but that's my own opinion.
It's great.
Yes.
Follow on Phil's comment and the fact that Little Platte North hires their own folks to do it in-house. And you mentioned 200 as a number compared to our six.
Yeah.
And if we don't approve this, which the lack of a second tells me there's some concern, but what is the possibility, it's theoretical, that we enter into agreement with Little Platte North to have them do our six and pay them accordingly? I mean, we do IT services rather than RDs.
We used to.
But we don't do that anymore?
Very few. Because it got to be a problem.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I would think
on those lines that there are some sharing within NRDs.
I would say Eric would have some difficulty with his staff is stretched like everybody else's and he's gonna send them to our NRD. I don't know, but I mean we can always ask, but I couldn't answer that without talking to him. And when you're talking about 200, you're talking about 200 through an entire NRD district, not just in this particular
area. But this is not too far away from what they currently monitor.
Again, I'd have to ask.
LaShar is close to where they currently monitor, but Waterloo is not.
Maybe their technician is bored and needs some more work.
Maybe. I could bring this up to Daryl, but I could see the heart attack in his eyes already if I say this.
That's all. Thanks.
Yeah, we do have a second to this item.
See, so Waterloo gets the water from MUD.
Just if I may, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to remind directors on our mission statement, it's development, management, utilization, and conservation of groundwater and surface water. And I think this gives our staff much needed tool to help manage the groundwater. My opinion.
Any other comment? Roll call.
Jack.
Yes.
Teaser?
No.
Thompson?
No.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. And that completes my report.
For half an hour. Eric, that's how much you'll charge us. You can do it for free.
Oh, no. Oh, Josh, you're up. You got a huge agenda here.
Time is 4:43. We'll call the FEL subcommittee to order.
That's great. I love it.
With that, notification of the Open Meeting Act it is in the back of the room posted. Quorum call.
Here.
Davidson?
Yes.
Here.
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 Here. A second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Pennington?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. Proof of publication of meeting notice, I have it before me. Moving on to item six, WP4 Professional Services account 0203-4400-565, over 110% lowering.
Good afternoon. So this is just an account that is over 110% in the budget. We haven't done any out-of-scope work. The billing rates have been far exceeded what I had expected when we were going through the budget process. WP4 is under construction, and we're almost to the winter phase, and so that's really exciting. That means we're at phase one with the dam. We'll let it settle over the winter while they kind of build some of the fishery structures so that once we get that spring thaw, we'll have the dam finished and we can start filling the lake. But right now, the total budget, or the total bill today is $301,000, and we had budgeted $250,000 based on the previous year's billing rates. With the start of construction, that ended up being a lot more than we expected. But the remaining amount on the contract that has been approved is $377,000. And so we expect that most of the work will be done this year, but there will still be some next year. However, just to be safe, we put the not to exceed amount at the full contract amount. So I can answer any questions.
So the billing rate, you're not talking about they're charging more for service. No, we're getting bills faster.
They're working more hours than anticipated, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not an increase in cost, it's just an increase in how fast they're doing the work, which is a good thing.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. When you say year, are you referring to fiscal year?
Fiscal year.
Okay. So these additional, was all of the $301,000 incurred, well, billed in this fiscal year?
Yes.
Was it all incurred in this fiscal year as well?
No, there were a couple of invoices that we did not get for work that was done last fiscal year in time to be attributed to that budget. So some of that work was done at the end of May and in June of fiscal year 2023, but it is being billed in fiscal year 2024.
Right. So are we paying for things in fiscal year 24 that were budgeted to be paid for in fiscal year 23?
Yes.
Did we roll over the amount that was unspent at that point?
Partial, yes. Yeah. But it wasn't enough to cover all of 2024.
The total contract will be the same. It's just the billing just ended up different. So we have a hard cutoff in July for those bill for the end of the fiscal year, which ends June 30th.
Yeah,
It just got carried over into the next budget.
Not all of it, apparently.
Not all of what we expect to be billed, because this is going to go over into the next fiscal year as well. So,
there will be more, if construction will complete in August of 2024.
Right.
Yes, so that would be our fiscal year 2024.
So we'll have another fiscal year that they'll be billing.
Didn't we just adopt this budget in September?
Yes, and we'll adopt in, we're always three months behind when we adopt the budget, because our fiscal year starts July 1st. And so by the time you adopt the budget, you're 3 months into the year.
So are we going to be paying for this into fiscal 2026?
I don't anticipate
that. It should be 24, 25.
Yeah, substantial.
But I mean, if this is 2020, if it's going to complete in August 2024, which is going to be on the 2025 budget.
Right.
Yes.
But we're already seven months behind. I mean, I don't understand how this is not accounted for in the budget that we just adopted.
So when we give our budget numbers, I look at the historical rate of billing of what we've had to estimate what portion of that contract will be billed in this fiscal year. And I underestimated, based on the historical rate, so there's more hours being billed than I had anticipated being billed.
Right. So they're just getting work done faster than we thought they would. Yes. So they're billing more because they're getting work faster.
Why would it be in the budget, though?
Because we didn't anticipate they'd get it done so fast.
But this is stuff that was done in the last fiscal year. That wasn't
part
billed
of it.
Just part of it.
So it's not that they're doing work faster, it's that they're billing slower.
Yeah.
they're behind on their bills.
No, they're not behind on their bills. We received one bill late, so that was one bill that didn't get adjusted. You know, because we turn in our budget numbers in May.
Right.
And so, and I have to wait until July to figure out that. And I, yeah, I just didn't know exactly what that number was going to be. And then, you know, typically our bills are, I want to say, between 20 and 30,000. And lately they've been 60, 70, 80,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to clear this up in my head, so the bill from the last fiscal year, mm-hmm. that money in the budget carried over, and we also had a bill that carried over. And then we're further along in the project, so you have more of the work completed. The total cost of the project, has that increased?
No.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we get a motion on the floor?
I do.
Second.
Second. Okay. Anybody from the general public wish to comment?
Yeah, I have a question. Where's the stamp site at? Would you please help me out here? Is it Washington County someplace or?
Gretna.
Gretna.
Gretna. And I guess, again, I don't know what all you're spending all this money for there. Is this just construction, apparently?
Flood control.
But the costs are for construction, right? Mm-hmm. Or land purchases, or do we know?
All the land's already purchased. We're building dams and so, I mean, if you're going to talk, if you want to talk about the cost of property, go sit down because I'm going to sit down.
The property, what kind of are we talking about there?
Okay, you're missing the point. The property has all been purchased already, so there's no need to talk about the cost of the land.
Oh, okay. Okay, but well, anyway, following up on my comment earlier there, Mr. Thompson, my appraisal was in a metropolitan area. So I don't know as though
Point of order, please be seated. You're not talking to something relevant to this issue. Please be seated.
Okay. Seems like it'd be easier for you guys just to let me say my
Please be seated and be quiet.
And get it done with. But you know, but that's.
Would you please be quiet, sir? Are we ready for the roll call?
There's no questions.
Henningsen?
No.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
That's it.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our agenda.